SBS Radio.
Wadamooli and welcome to NITV Radio. It's that time of the week again where we get to check in with Wiradjuri woman and journalist Ray Johnston to yarn all things science and technology. Welcome back to the program, Ray.
Thanks for having me, sis.
Lovely to have you back again, as we do each Friday on the program. And first up today, you're going to be telling us a story about training for Northern Territory general practitioners. Apparently, they're facing a grim future. How so?
Yeah, so there's a national trend for declining enrolments in GP training. And according to a new study by the Menzies School of Health Research, this is most obvious in the Northern Territory. And they're saying that it could be a disaster for the future of the NT's GP workforce. Now, historically, the NT has really struggled to attract and keep GPs, especially in remote areas. And it relies really heavily on doctors that are enrolled in GP training. But between 2016 and 2020, new enrolments in GP training in the NT, they fell by 50%, which is a huge number to fall by. Like, for comparison, the overall national decline was 12%. So that really shows the difference there. And this study, it looked at why that's happening and what needs to be done about it. And they found that the most important phase of training to invest in was the period of time from when medical students graduated to when they first enrolled in a specialty training program. Now, at that point in time, many of them are still making up their minds about their career path and what part of medicine they're going to be heading into. So the two most important actions they're saying targeting these junior doctors are to give them extra training opportunities outside of hospitals in primary care and to select junior doctors for internships and other hospital training positions who are already interested in working, for example, as a general practice, with special interest in Aboriginal health or remote medicine, and also those doctors that do have interest in staying in the NT in the longer term. If we can identify them really early, and the researchers are saying that, you know, that it will need a coordinated response from a bunch of agencies to make sure that we can actually support these GPs or future GPs to be working in the NT, we might be able to increase the numbers. But if we don't do something, we're going to end up with a severe shortage where we really do need to have a good supply of doctors.
And we absolutely do, especially in the Northern Territory for our First Nations community members as well, Ray. Now we go from talking about GPs in the NT to talking about rodents and apparently saving Australia's rodents. Why one species thrived where another one has died out. Can you tell us more about this story, please, sis?
Yeah, so this story takes place on Dool Island, which is on the West Australian coast, and it has been the home of two attempts to revive endangered species. Now, the Joongari mouse, which we spoke about last week, that we thought was extinct until we looked at museum specimens and matched the DNA, and it turns out it's actually been living in WA the whole time, so it's not extinct. They put the Joongari mouse and also the golden bandicoot. They were both introduced to this island, which has no feral predators. It's only got native, natural apex predators on the islands. And they've been trying to create new populations there. Now, the golden bandicoot, it succeeded and it's doing really well on the island. But the Joongari mouse, it only survived there for a few years. So researchers, they looked at the two projects to work out, you know, what factors lead to successful or unsuccessful programs like this that they call translocation. And they say that the impact of threats from native predators and specific habitat needs and also natural disasters like storms need to be considered, along with the ability of a species to be able to handle a change in its environment. You know, they're taking it from one place place to put it on the island. Can it actually handle that and can it adapt? So we did learn a lot from this experiment, and we also ended up with a whole new population of golden bandicoots. So good story all round, I'd say.
Now we go from talking about those rodents to Queensland dengue fever, risk area larger than first thought. What's happening here?
Yeah, so there's new research that was just published in the Medical Journal of Australia, and it says the Queensland map of areas where dengue fever is, that we know it is, needs to be updated to include the area from Townsville south to Rockhampton, because there's been an outbreak of dengue virus in Rocky in particular, and it's happened on the 23rd of May in 2019. There was a confirmed case in a lab, they found it, from a Rockhampton resident. And also on the 5th of May that year, there was a 71-year-old man that had no history of travel overseas or to far north Queensland, and he had symptoms just like dengue fever, and it lasted for a month, and it turned out he had dengue fever as well. Then there was a period of time between 23rd of May and the 7th of October where there were 21 locally acquired cases in Rockhampton of dengue fever. And you know, this was the first outbreak of locally acquired dengue in central Queensland for 65 years, it turns out. But there are increasing numbers. There's increasing numbers of cases in the area. So they're saying that we need to be careful when we're heading into Rocky, and you know, medical services, you know, travel advisories all need to be letting people know that there is dengue fever in the area.
What an important story to talk about, particularly for those poor people who have suffered dengue fever who live in Rockhampton. I have family members up in Rocky, so I'll be informing them of the latest, what's happening with the dengue fever. So thanks for that, Sis.
No worries at all.
Now we go from talking about Queensland dengue fever risk to large sharks observed doing shift work, apparently, to share their resources. Do tell me more, Sis.
Yeah, so this is new research from Murdoch University's Harry Butler Institute, and it's tracked a group of six coastal species, including tiger sharks and great hammerhead sharks, and they found that they time their hunting periods when they're in shared areas. Now, this is the first example of marine predators sharing resources by foraging at different times of the day, and this is a relatively rare way of sharing resources in nature, but it could be more common than we think, because it appears that we've been understudying these ecosystems. And the research suggests that large coastal sharks that live near each other, they can stick to a daily schedule, hunting at these different times of day so that they can peacefully coexist. And this reduces the competition for food. And for some species, it reduces the chance of being eaten by the larger species as well. And the timing, they think, is likely to be at least partially driven by hierarchy. So less dominant predators are going to forage in, you know, the not so good times to avoid the larger sharks that get to call dibs on the better times of day to do it. And this research, I find this really interesting. They used data loggers to monitor the movement of each species. They basically used the same technology that we use in Fitbits for humans. So they used Fitbits in sharks to work out when they were moving and at what time. Shark bits, that's it. And they found that bull sharks were most active in early morning hours. Tiger sharks are out at midday. Sandbar sharks are in the afternoon. You've got blacktip sharks during the evening hours, and both scalloped and great hammerhead sharks are there during the nighttime hours, and they were the only two species that were out at the same time of day. And I just think that this is really cool, and the more that we know about sharks, the better, because as you know, they play a really crucial role in preserving our healthy ecosystems. So it's important to understand how they behave and help us to preserve and restore their marine systems that they need to keep surviving.
Too deadly to finish on that positive story about sharks on our science and technology segment. Great to talk to you today. Ray Johnston, Wiradjuri woman and journalist, thank you so much for joining us again right here on NITV Radio.
Anytime.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.